You look at the monk's life as designed by the Buddha, and you notice that it has two dimensions. One is time by yourself to be secluded, and the other is time to be with the community. You need both as your education, because as the Buddha pointed out, the sources of right view, in some cases, are internal, sometimes they're external. The factors that lead to stream entry are sometimes internal, sometimes external. The internal faculty, in both cases, is appropriate attention. The external one, in terms of stream entry, is admirable friendship. You remember what admirable friendship means. It's not just having good people as friends, but it also means observing their good qualities, asking them about their good qualities, how they go about developing them, and then trying to emulate them. So even though that's an external factor, you have to put forth a lot of your own energy to develop it. We can see this in the list that the Buddha said are the qualities of a true person, sat bodhisattva. True in the sense of being well-trained and having a true desire to train. There are seven qualities in all. One of them, having a sense of the Dhamma, is something you learn through words, through reading, through listening. The other six are more complex in how you learn them. You observe other people's behavior. You observe your own behavior as you try to emulate them. You see what works and what doesn't work, and you perfect your wisdom that way. In fact, these qualities are listed in textbooks in Thailand as aspects of discernment. In terms of having a sense of the Dharma, the first quality, it's good to know what the Buddha taught and what he didn't teach, because you're going to hear a lot of non-Dharma from a lot of other people. And you're going to hear a lot of non-Dharma in your own mind. Think of a John Munn off in the wilderness. Fortunately, he'd learned a lot of Dharma. We tend to think of the forest tradition as being kind of uneducated, but no, they educated themselves. They wanted to know the Dharma, they wanted to know the Vinaya, they learned as much as they could. When John Munn went off into the forest, he tended to have a lot of visions. Devas coming to tell him what he should and shouldn't do. Visions of arahants, visions of the Buddha. And as he told to John Fuang, he learned to realize that it didn't matter who you saw in the vision. You had to take what they said and measure it against the Dharma. That may be the meaning of the old Zen story where they say, if you see the Buddha on the road, kill him. In other words, if you're having a vision of the Buddha coming to teach you, you can't really trust it just because it claims to be the Buddha. Visions don't have identity cards. They don't have real IDs. So what you do is you take what you've learned from the vision in terms of the instructions, and if it's something that you can actually test in your actions, and it seems to be in line with what you already know of the Dharma, then you go in and test it. If it's not in line with what you know of the Dharma, put it aside. If it's not something you can test, say you have a vision of yourself in a previous lifetime, either in a very high position or very low position, just tell yourself, well, that's possible, but that's not what we're here for. It's because you know the Dharma that you can test. You have standards for judgment against which you can measure what you hear from other people and what you see appearing in your own mind. So as I said, the remaining six qualities have to do with your powers of observation. The first of the six is having a sense of the meaning. What does the Dhamma mean? The word meaning in Pali can mean just how you would interpret something, what its purpose is, what its goal is, and then finally, whether it's beneficial. That's the kind of thing you can have explained to you to some extent. But when the Buddha is talking about concentration, he's not just talking about other words to define concentration or describe concentration. He's talking about the actual experience. You have to try to develop that quality in your own mind. When he talks about the deathless, it's not something you can judge from just listening. something appears in the mind, a state. There are these states that they call the defilements of insight, or the corruptions of insight, which can bear a lot of resemblance to what you've heard about the deathless. The only way we can test them is, on the one hand, to try to get your mind as still as possible, and try to get sensitive to the processes of fabrication as much as you can. Peel them away as best you can. When you really know them well, then when something unfabricated comes, you recognize it. But again, even afterwards, you have to test it. Measure it against what you've been told about the results of stream entry. Realize that the experience of stream entry is not something you can maintain. If it's something you can maintain, then it's fabricated. So as I mentioned last night at John Swett's realization, that if you don't know the third noble truth, you don't really understand the other three. You have a general idea. But it's only when they yield their results that you realize that, okay, yes, you've experienced all four noble truths. So it's not just a matter of interpreting the texts. It's a matter of having a good sense of what they're for, how they should be used, how they shouldn't be used. That way you get the best use out of them. Another quality you have to develop sensitivity to is having a sense of yourself, knowing how to read your own mind, knowing where it's weak, knowing where it's strong. Now you can use your strengths in order to overcome your weaknesses. Now you can use your knowledge of what's right to detect what you've got in terms of wrong attitudes. The Buddha gives you a list of things that you use to measure yourself. The first is your conviction. The second is the level of your virtue. The third is the level of your generosity. The fourth is your knowledge of the Dhamma. The fifth is your ingenuity, learning how to take what you've learned in the Dhamma and apply it to your own situation in a way that really is effective. In other words, you have to come up with your own wisdom. You can't be borrowing the Buddha's wisdom all the time. You have to get to the point where you can develop your own. And then the final quality is discernment. Discernment here covers both the activities you engage in, the questions you ask, the way you look, and also the insights you gain as a result. Now, four of those qualities are actually qualities of an admirable friend: the conviction, virtue, generosity, and discernment. So in testing yourself, measuring yourself, getting a sense of yourself, you're trying to see to what extent you are an admirable friend to yourself. As the Buddha said, when you reach stream entry, you're independent in the Dhamma. But until that point, you're going to need to abandon other people to provide these qualities, strengthen your conviction, your virtue, your generosity, your discernment. That's the third of the seven qualities. The fourth is having a sense of enough, or as the Pali says, a sense of the right measure, metta nyutta. They mention having a sense of how much food is enough. But they also apply to how much sleep is enough when you're meditating, you're focusing on the breath, how much pressure is enough, how much is too much, how much is not enough. Think of that image of the baby quail. If you hold it too loosely, it's going to fly away. If you hold it too tightly, it's going to die. So how much pressure in your meditation is just right? I have a student who spent a lot of time alone in the forest in the northwest of Thailand. And there was a period when he was putting a lot of pressure on himself. One day he rested, leaned against his hut. He saw some elephants walking through the forest below him. And one of the elephants turned to him and started talking to him. He realized, I'm going crazy. There was too much pressure on his practice, so he started spending more time with his fellow monks in order to regain his balance, regain his grounding. A while later, he happened to visit one of the famous Ajahns in another part of Thailand. And the Ajahn had a ringing bell, much like the ring bowls that the Tibetans had. So he rang it. He said, see, you can hear the sound without any effort. If I hit it too hard, the sound isn't good. If I hit it too soft, you can't hear it at all. When things are just right, then you know they're right. And you have to learn how to develop your ear for what's right. That's having a sense of measure or a sense of enough. Then there's having a sense of the right time. In the text, they talk about knowing the right time to ask questions about the Dharma, knowing the right time to sit and meditate quietly. Again, the meditation is not just an internal process. You're picking up a skill that other people have mastered to some extent, at least. It's good to be able to tap into their knowledge. Otherwise, if you try to reinvent the Dharma wheel, you might invent a crooked wheel that doesn't really roll properly. The next quality is having a sense of other people, a sense of societies, I'd say. Which, you know, you're talking with a group of lay people, how do you talk? You're talking with a group of monks, how do you talk? How do you conduct your manners? Because manners are important. There's a lot of laws that people break. Nobody really cares. You drive past the speed limit, very few people get upset. You make a real faux pas that shows you have some disrespect for someone else. It's not against the law, but it can really harm your standing among the group. So you have to look around you. Get a sense of, when I'm with this group of people, this is how I should behave. When I'm with this group, this is how I should behave. In the monkhood, we have a system of hierarchies. And the hierarchy sometimes is held to very strictly, and other times it's not. To show that the hierarchy has something to do with respect that's due to people for their seniority. In other areas where you want to have a more human conversation, so you learn to be sensitive to that. This requires a lot of observation. This is one of the reasons why the Buddha said, when he's looking for a student, he wanted someone who was honest and no deceiver, but also observant. Because through your powers of observation, you're going to learn these things. They're not going to be taught to you. They do have books of what they call the Kawat, which we don't have here. I noticed a lot of my training with the John Fuang was learning the habits, the customs of the monkhood by observing him, by observing the other monks. It's a kind of observation that requires you use your active powers of inquiry. And when you've learned something through your own inquiry, it means a lot more to you. It's like learning a language. You can be told that this word means that and that word means this. But if you notice that when people are talking, they may use a word in unexpected ways. And because it's your own discovery, it sticks with you. The final quality is having a sense of the people you should associate with. You want to associate with people who live with the Dharma, live for the sake of the Dharma, are happy to listen to the Dharma, but not only happy to listen, happy to think about it. Not only happy to think about it, but happy to talk about it. Not only happy to talk about it, but happy to practice it. Those are the people you want to look to for friends. Now, there are a lot of other people in the world you have to associate with. It's part of being part of the human race. There are all kinds of people around us. But who are the people you go to for advice? Who are the people you look to for inspiration? Who are the people you look to emulate? In other words, you have to have a sense of who your admirable friends are and where you want to develop an admirable friendship. So those are the qualities. A sense of the Dharma, a sense of its meaning, a sense of yourself, a sense of enough, a sense of the right time and place, a sense of societies and their manners, and a sense of people you can associate with as admirable friends. As I said, the first one, the Dharma, is something that you learn through the words. The rest require your powers of observation, that you be quick in noticing things, quick in hearing things. Of course, you always check what you've learned. That's part of the back and forth of using your own powers of observation, but also learning to check them with other people. This is why for the monks, the first 5 years are to be spent with a mentor so they can learn to observe, hopefully have good people to observe, and develop their own powers of observation. Because developing these powers outside develops qualities that you need inside as well. As I said, having a sense of the Dharma protects you from strange visions or strange interpretations of your meditation experiences. Having a sense of its purpose gives you an idea of what the Dharma is good for. It's not good for sitting around and arguing about it. Unless both sides are seeking the truth and they're just trying to hammer out where they're not clear about it. Having a sense of yourself, having a sense of who you should associate with inside, all of these factors have both internal and external implications. Which is why we're sitting here living in this community. We don't have a vow of silence. We do talk. And that's how you learn right conversation, learn right speech. If you maintain silence all the time, how are you going to learn right speech? And as for your gaze, it's not just focusing inward all the time. As John Lee once said, you live in a monastery, you have to have your eyes as large as the monastery. See what needs to be done. This is a voluntary organization. And as you may have noticed, there's not a lot of direction as to what needs to be done. We need people to see for themselves. That's how you develop your powers of observation. That's how you develop your goodness, the desire to do good and to make it genuinely good and not just feeling good about yourself for having done something, but actually trying to do it well. That's an important part of the practice. So even though we do gaze inside a lot here, we also have to have eyes as large as the monastery and know what to look for. This list gives you an idea of what things you should look for. It raises a series of questions. And you have to find the answers yourself.